Welcome to She Struts Radio, where we give voice to women's stories, longings, pain, deepest heart's desires, and dreams, and support them in being unapologetically vocal, visible, and vulnerable women, happily claiming their place in the world. Now, here's your host, author and speaker, Deborah M. Ricks.
Welcome to She Struts Radio. Oh, Jill Scott, she always brings it in for me. I can't resist that song. And we will be talking about love and relationships this evening. So it is so apropos to play Jill Scott. And just hold on, because we have more of her. And it's a song that I actually just heard today. And it's so, so fitting for this evening's conversation. I am your host, Deborah M. Ricks, and I am superbly delighted to be here this evening. Why? Because, first of all, it's nice to be alive. And secondly, I love radio. If you know me, you know I love radio. And thirdly, it's because you are here with me, and you could be anywhere else right now, but you're choosing to be here, and I am grateful for that. This evening, we're talking about preparing for your divine lovemate. Preparing for your divine lovemate. We're not talking about just any old lovemate. We're talking about your divine lovemate. And I have a marvelous guest with me that I'm going to introduce to you in just a moment. So let me just tell you a little bit about who I am in case you don't know. I'm Deborah M. Ricks, as I said, and I am a mother of a 21-year-old graduating senior. She goes to Howard University. I'm very proud to be her mother. I am an editor of more than three dozen books, an author of three books. The most recent book is Write That Book. If you are a wannabe author, then this is the book for you. I am also a coach. I help people birth things like books and to deep dive into self-love. And I am a publisher and a blogger. And I am a woman who's on a journey to just to reclaim parts of myself that was talked out of me, beaten out of me, you name it. I feel like I'm in this place of recovery and reclaiming myself, and this is why I lean into women. And although we do have men, and I love to have men on the call, on the air with us, we need you. But I lean into women because why? I know women, and I know some of the issues that we wrestle with, and I like to help address those because, truth be told, if we get it together, we help our men get it together. Let me introduce you to our guest. I was on YouTube, and I love how technology takes us around the world and allows us into the minds and hearts and homes and offices and boardrooms and everywhere. Allows us into these places that we wouldn't otherwise have. And so I was on YouTube, and I don't know how I stumbled upon this man's channel, but I did. And I just could not help myself. I just kept watching his videos because they really spoke to me. At the time, I was releasing a relationship, and I really, really needed to hear a man, particularly a black man, talk about some of the issues that Men in Honor talks about. Because I, like so many black women, even though we don't like to say it out loud, many of us are losing hope, or we don't know that we can attract a quality man and that they even exist. And so when I saw this gentleman on YouTube and his beautiful wife and their five children, I was hopeful. He renewed my hope, and literally mankind, right? And so I reached out to him to have him come on the show because what I learn, I like to share. And as someone like him, I think can help women better understand, and men, what we need to do. What are some of the things we can do, ought to be doing, to be better lovers, be better mates? When I say lover, I mean whether you're married, but I mean someone who loves and someone who is able to be loved. And so Men in Honor, he is a husband and a father of five children, and he actually delivered three, helped deliver, I don't know if he, I mean, with his own hands, three of his own children. That right there is amazing. He's a writer, he's a lecturer, musician, video producer, and counselor. And he and his wife have been together, as he calls it, in a positive relationship for more than 14 years. And you will learn more about him as he speaks, and you can go to his website at Men in Honor, and it's LENONHONOR.com. But please don't go while we're doing the show. Hang in there with us. I will open up the lines later. I want you to get in on this conversation, share your wisdom, ask questions, and so prepare yourself for that time. Men in Honor, welcome to She Struts Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me, Deborah. I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and to your listening audience, and I look forward to the conversation.
Yes, yes, I do too. I know that everybody desires love. I mean, we need love to not just to thrive, but to even survive. We need love. Love is like oxygen. Love is like touch. Even though we sometimes try to go without love and touch, we need it to feel whole and healthy. And so I want to talk initially about what do you see as some of the challenges, some of the mistakes and missteps that we take, and then we will explore some of the things that we ought to be doing if we truly desire our divine love mate. I'll open it with this Zora Neale Hurston. She says, she's an author. If you don't know her, audience, Zora Neale Hurston is one of my favorite authors and anthropologist, and she wrote what I call a bestseller in 1937. And she says this about love. She says, love, I find, is like singing. Everybody can do enough to satisfy themselves, though it may not impress the neighbors as being very much. And so, Lennon, can we talk initially, and then we start off talking about what do you see as the state of our relationships?
Well, I would say that the state of relationships amongst men and women in general is strained, and for various reasons. I think one of the major reasons that is often not looked at is the fact that we are being raised in a sexist global culture, which puts women in a disadvantaged position, but then also causes a lot of men to feel as if they're entitled to things that they may not necessarily be prepared for when it comes to relationships. So I think on one level, the sexism does play a role in the destabilization of male-female relationships. However, this does not mean that a man and a woman cannot come together if they have done the proper amount of personal work and personal healing to establish a positive relationship. So though we can say that there are a lot of struggles out there in male-female relationships, this does mean that somehow we cannot reach beyond the struggle and actually benefit from having interactions with each other, we are experiencing, as you say, love.
I need to ask my audience how they are hearing you, because I'm very particular about that. You sound a little muffled. If you are hearing Lennon clearly, just for this moment, if he's coming across loud and clear for you, could you please press 1? So that I can, if he's clear, well, I should do it the other way. If you're having difficulty hearing him, press 1 if he's kind of muddled to you. I guess.
Yeah, how does it sound now?
I can talk louder. No, it's a muddled sound. So do you have another device? Because people are pressing 1.
Can you call back on your landline
or your phone?
Yes, I'll do that. Okay.
Okay, I'll play a little music while you're away. Okay.
Okay.
Hang on, folks. Thank you. He's going to call back. Little Kim for us.
We can go outside and play in the snow. Break it down like Eskimos. Simply stated, there's no place I'd rather be. It's Christmas time for you and me, girl. Spread love, peace, and joy throughout the world. While every little boy's trying to find something for his favorite girl. Yes, baby, your Santa Claus is on his way. He'll be keeping you satisfied Christmas Day. What can I do to make your dreams come true for Christmas? What can I bring to make your heart sing so you'll be mine for Christmas? Have a Merry Christmas, babe. Hey, girl.
There'll be jingle bells for you and me. We'll snuggle by the Christmas tree. A celebration of green and gold. We'll sing along to Nat King Cole. Good tidings to all and to all good cheer. I just want to know my baby's here. Keeping me warm all through the night, yeah. I've got an angel by my side. What can I do to make your dream?
Lynn, is that you?
Yes, this is me. How does it sound now?
Much better.
Okay, good.
Yes, much better. We had a little Kim in the March, a little Christmas song in March.
Okay.
Yes, much better. Thank you for doing that, because we don't want to miss what you have to say. So I actually want you to, I heard you say that you think our relationships, for the most part, they're pretty strained. And you said something about men desiring to have access to things that they're not ready for or entitled to. Can you kind of repeat that?
Yes. Well, what I was talking about was one of the great challenges amongst the species when we talk about male-female relationships is simply that we are all being raised and have all been raised in a culture of sexism. And within this culture of sexism, women are placed in a disempowered position or at least in a disadvantaged position compared to men on many different levels. And as a consequence, there are men who believe that they are deserving of things that they are not prepared for. And I'm very clear about this, that it's not that a man or a woman is not deserving of being in a positive relationship. It is that they must be prepared for such a thing. And I think that's one of the challenges when we talk about male-female relationships, and in particular for men, that we are not being raised properly so that we are prepared to establish positive relationships. And let me just add, and this also applies to women. Women in general, I would also say that women tend not to be prepared. And the reason why I say that is because the model that we should see that begins our preparation process should take place in the home. And how many of us actually were raised in households? How many of us were raised in households wherein our mother and our father gave us an example of a positive relationship? And that should be, that example of a positive relationship from our parents should be the beginning stages of our preparation process, so that once we come of age and we seek a relationship, we're prepared for a positive one.
So you use that word positive quite a lot. Could you just give a brief description of what you call a positive relationship?
Yes, and that's so very important, because one must be clear about what one desires. One can say, I want to be in a relationship. Yes, you can be in a relationship, but that doesn't mean that the relationship is going to be healthy. I think a lot of us, we've been in those types of relationships, and there were times where maybe we thought that it was a good relationship, and that's what we were asking for, but because we weren't very specific, we ended up putting ourselves in a relationship that wasn't necessarily good for us. So what I mean by a positive relationship, this is a relationship wherein the man and the woman both see each other as human beings, and they see their human value. And not only do they see each other's human value, but they're also willing to respect each other as human beings in the first place. Not only are they willing to respect each other as human beings in the first place, but they're in a position to where not only are they able to receive love, but to also give love. And therefore, the foundation of the relationship is this mutual respect. It is about a mutual giving and mutual caring. And when we have that type of a foundation, what grows out of that is a positive experience within the context of the relationship. So that's what I mean by a positive relationship, wherein both parties are experiencing a level of love. And this does not mean that there aren't any problems, but this does mean that the foundation is set properly, and the foundation is based upon mutual respect, and they both see each other's human value in the first place.
Wow. You know, you said they see each other as human beings. That should come naturally, but clearly it doesn't. What are we seeing each other as if we're not seeing each other as human beings?
Well, I would say that there are some women who see men as a financial resource, and that's a problem. And there are also some men who see, I'm saying some men who see women as an object to be dominated sexually. And again, sexism sets up this dynamic of power and control. And so for a lot of men, the way through which they wield their power is through the domination of women sexually. So they see women through that lens. Sexism also puts women in a disadvantaged position when it comes to earning certain levels of income. And so there are a lot of women whose inevitably see men as a source of revenue or income. And I'm not saying all, I'm saying some. And that has a lot to do with the dynamics of sexism and putting women in a disadvantaged position. But again, if that is how we see each other, just as an example, how can we expect to establish a positive relationship if we don't even see each other as human beings in the first place, not as resources, not as something to be sexually dominated, not as something to be controlled, right? A lot of people are in relationships and they're seeking for power and control. Who's in control of what? Who's in control of the money? Who's in control in the bedroom? Who's in control in the sex? Who's in control of the children? That's what I call the male versus female war imprint program. And a lot of us, we're running that particular program. And in the process, we cannot see each other's human value. So in the first place, we have to see each other as human beings and give each other the level of respect that we deserve simply as human beings in the first place.
I would suggest that if we're not seeing each other as human beings, we're not seeing ourselves as human beings. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. As another analogy, if we cannot love each other, it probably comes back to us not really loving ourselves, because when you truly love someone else, you know that it's going to benefit you too. You love someone else, they should love you back. It's going to benefit you too. But if you don't love yourself on a level that you truly deserve, then you're probably not going to be able to love someone else, because you're going to deny yourself of the level of love that someone else can and will give to you. So, yes, it comes back to that. I have a saying that all relationships are based upon the value that you place upon yourself. And if you have a high value, then you're going to be open to not only giving love but also receiving love. If you have a low value, then you're going to be open to giving love or receiving love. So it always comes back to the value that you place upon yourself.
There's so much we can talk about, because having watched your videos, I know that you grew up in an abusive family. Your father was abusive. He was an alcoholic. And I'm just wondering, how did you get to be the man that you are given those circumstances? I mean, you told an incredible story about how you actually got him out of the house. And you were just a little boy. I thought that was amazing courage and ingenuity as well. So how does a man, because what I see is no, many of us didn't have that. I had a two-parent household, but I still didn't see the love that you're talking about. And so I went into the world having to learn, with low self-esteem now, having to learn the hard way how to be a woman, how to love and be loved. And it wasn't until I was married, I was 28 years old and I was married, and that's when I got present to the reality, and that was I didn't know how to love, nor did I know how to be loved, because I didn't even feel worthy of love. And so I see so many of us, that's how a lot of people are going, walking through the world, broken, feeling damaged, not feeling good about who they are enough, don't love themselves, but yet desperately trying to be in a relationship. I used to be that woman, trying to be in a relationship, and on the one hand, don't even feel deserving of love. So if someone were to really show up and give you love, run. You run. That's what a broken person does. They sabotage. So how did you get to where you are? What did you do to heal? Because that's what we're talking about, preparing. Because a lot of people are dealing with this sense of, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, something's wrong with me. What did you do?
Yes. Well, from my childhood, I didn't see positive examples of manhood. I didn't see a positive example of fatherhood. I didn't see a positive relationship, and not just with my mother and father, but just in general. I just did not see that. I didn't see it in my extended family. I didn't see it in people around me either. Very few people. I can count maybe two people in my childhood that I can remember had a decent relationship. So that's very telling. And our childhood, the experiences that we have in our childhood often mold how we see things later on in life. So if we mentioned earlier, losing hope, there are a lot of women who have lost hope And a lot of women may believe that the losing of hope is directly related to their experiences when they were adults. I think that that's part of it, but I also would say that part of it, too, is based upon what we experienced and what women have experienced when they were children. The same thing applies to me. What I saw in my household, it was very destructive, very demoralizing. You said my father, not only was he an alcoholic and he was abusive verbally and physically towards my mother, he was also verbally and physically abusive to myself and my siblings, but he was also a drug addict. And for anyone who grows up in a household wherein you have substance abuse issues on that level, at a certain point my father was on crack. It becomes very difficult, especially for young males or even boys, to begin to see themselves. Again, we tend to see through the lens of our childhood trauma. It's very difficult for us to see ourselves beyond the scope of that. But one of the things that I did when I was a child was I made a firm commitment. And the thing is that any man can make this commitment, whether you are young, whether you are older, even if you're a boy and you're hearing this, you can make a firm commitment today that you are going to do everything in your power to be the best man that you can possibly be. Now, this does not mean that you're going to be perfect, because by no means am I perfect, but you can make a commitment at any time in your life that you're going to work and you're going to continue to work on yourself so that you can be the best man that you can be. I happened to make that commitment at a very early age. I would say by the time I was about 11 years old, I had made that firm commitment. Now, though I made that commitment, I didn't know how I was going to get to where I'm at today. And by no means am I at the apex or I've arrived at the final destination, because I still have a lot of work to do as a man, as a husband, as a father, work on myself, the personal work, so I can do better by my family, so I can do better by everyone who I come in contact with. So I didn't have a roadmap, but I remained committed. And I will tell you that one of the most important things that I did was that I took the time to work on myself. And I just on three levels, I'll give you these three levels, and if you'd like to talk more on these three levels, I can elaborate further. But I looked at three areas, and I looked at my thoughts, I looked at my words, and I looked at my actions day by day. I asked the question, what types of thoughts do I keep about myself? What type of thoughts do I keep with respect to women? What type of thoughts do I have about male-female relationships? What type of thoughts do I have about sex and sexual intercourse? You know, what type of thoughts do I have in terms of sexism? And I've had to really work through sexist ideology that I picked up growing up as a child coming into a young adult. So working on your thoughts, and this can be for men too, working on for women too, to work on the thoughts that you keep is very important, because the thoughts that you keep will influence everything that you do, from the words that you speak and the actions that you take. From a very early age, I was very clear that I needed to continue to refine my thoughts and more specifically refine my mentality as it relates to what it means to be a man, what it means to be a husband, and what it means to be a father. Also, I worked on my words. I had to be clear about the types of words that I was using, especially when I was younger. You know, terminology like bitch and hoe, that kind of thing. I grew up listening to music that, you know, it promoted that. And I had to make a commitment to myself that I would not use those words. How can a man or a boy expect to be in a positive relationship with a woman when we're in his very language, which is reflective of his mentality, there is extreme levels of disrespect and dehumanization of women wherein that man obviously or that boy obviously does not see the human value in the woman. It's virtually impossible. The same thing applies to women. If you say things like there are no good men out there or that men are all men are dogs, well, that will become your reality based upon your mentality. But you can't expect to be in a positive relationship with a honorable man if you have that mentality or if that type of language is in your vocabulary. So I took the time as a young male and going into college to really refine my words. I made a commitment to stop cursing, you know, and I carried that commitment for many, many years. I also made a commitment to sexual discipline by the time I got into college, and I abstained from sexual discipline for 5 years while I was in college, and even after I graduated or got out of college, we're talking over 6 years of sexual abstinence. That was also part of my refinement process. That gets into the last level, which is the refinement of our actions. Refinement of my thoughts, my words, and then my actions. That also means sexual behavior. That also means how I treated myself, what I did to myself, the types of foods that I was eating. I made a commitment to change my diet. All of these things combined put me in a position to where by the time I was 25 years old and my wife was 21 years old at that time, I at least had a chance to establish a positive relationship. Again, these are just some of the things that I did. Refining my thoughts, my words, and my actions, it at least put me in a position to start the process of experiencing a positive relationship. And so many of us, we do not do this. What we tend to do, and this is what I also did prior to meeting my wife, we get into a relationship. We don't really know what we want, but we get into a relationship because we tend to say, I want to be in a relationship. Yeah, but what kind of relationship? What kind of man do you want to be with as a woman? What kind of woman do you want to be with as a man? What are your goals that reach beyond just the relationship? Do you want to have a family someday? You know, what other things, what are the collective goals? Do you have a collective vision that you can aspire toward? These are the types of questions that we should ask. We tend not to do that. We get into relationships. Those relationships, we tend to struggle because we're not prepared. We have low expectations about what the relationship should be like. We also tend not to be clear about what it is that we deserve in the relationship. And then as a consequence, we suffer. We suffer on many levels. We suffer in some cases financially, in some cases emotionally, in some cases sexually. I mean, it goes on and on. And then when we get out of that relationship, we've been traumatized by being in this relationship, men and women. And what do we tend to do? We don't take the time to refine ourselves. We don't take the time to heal. We don't take the time to look at our thoughts, to look at our words, to look at our actions. We don't take the time to look at what are the lessons that I was meant to learn in that horrible relationship that can prepare me so I can have wisdom to make a better choice next time. What do we tend to do? We jump into another one. And then we jump into that other relationship, and we have a similar experience, a different male this time or a different female this time that we're dealing with, and we have the same type of experience, in many cases worse, and then we get out of that relationship and we repeat the cycle all over again. Well, what I'm saying to everyone is that there is two levels. One is the personal refinement of one's thoughts, one's words, and actions, but then it is also about taking the time off from a relationship so that you can have the time needed to do those things, and then you can actually heal from the past relationships that you've been in. When you come to the table with a level of healing and with a level of knowledge based upon past relationships and based upon a clear idea about what you want into a relationship, then you have a chance to establish a positive one. So by the time I was 25, I had a chance, and thankfully through continuous work, I mean, my wife and I, we still continue to work on ourselves and our relationship. We now have we're about to have our 15-year anniversary. No arguing, no fussing, no fighting, no betrayal, none of the things that people tend to expect in relationships. And we have 5 beautiful children who are actually being raised in a household where, and they get to see, like my wife and I did not see, they actually get to see a loving relationship which becomes their archetype, an archetype that so many of us did not have growing up as children. So it's possible for anyone. My wife and I, we're living proof of this.
And I've observed you on camera. In fact, I actually have you one of your videos with you and one maybe a little baby. I know there's maybe several of your children in the video, and I put it in one of my blogs several weeks ago for people to view because we need those images. We absolutely need those images. Sitting here in awe that you were able to conjure up this image of a positive relationship with yourself first and do all the things that you did at 11 years old. You made a decision. It's like I'm really in awe of that, because I have seen people, and I've been one of these people. I was like, you go from relationship to relationship looking for something that you ought to be giving yourself first of all. And
yes,
what I've noticed also, Lennon, is that people use relationships when they really ought to be dedicating their lives and their time on some other worthy causes. One of the reasons I have such admiration and appreciation for Oprah Winfrey, not just because she is a billionaire, it's because all those years of excellence and dedication, that she has not allowed whatever went on in her relationship to cause her to just, you know, throw in a towel or be sloppy with her work. That's excellent. All those years. And a lot of people, and I have done this, they ought to be starting a business, or they ought to be pouring their energy into their entrepreneurship, or they ought to be pouring their energy into their children even, or traveling the world or whatever, but they're trying to get in the relationship so desperately. Why is this? What is going on when we do that?
Well, I think that it's natural for people to want to experience relationships. The problem is that most people are not clear about the differences between a positive relationship and a negative one. See, the positive relationship will allow anyone, including Oprah Winfrey, to do everything that she is doing plus more. I can give you an example. Everything that I've done in my life from the age of 25 to now, so we're talking almost 15 years, most of what I have accomplished, writing books, you know, lecturing, doing documentaries, raising children, delivering babies, all this kind of thing, none of that would have been possible without my wife, being in a positive relationship with my wife. See, the challenge is that people are seeking, and really what people are seeking is happiness, and they feel like they can find that happiness through just simply being in a relationship, and any old relationship will do. It doesn't work that way. You see, when you're in a positive relationship, it fortifies the best in you. It allows you to become greater than what you currently are. That's how it works. And that's why I think that there is an underlying, and it's also a subconscious motivating force for most people to want to be in a relationship. The problem is that they're not clear about the type of relationship that they need to be in and that they're deserving of. When you're in a positive relationship, all that you are achieving now can be achieved and more. When you're in a negative relationship, you're going to have a very difficult time achieving the things that you seek to achieve, and you're also going to have a very difficult time being happy with your life. So I think that on one hand, I think it's natural. It's natural for people to want to be in relationships. The unnatural part is that we tend to put ourselves in dysfunctional relationships, and when we put ourselves in those dysfunctional relationships, it brings levels of dysfunction in all other areas of our lives, and therefore we're unable to achieve on the same levels that we would have had we not been in a relationship, let alone achieve on levels less than we would have if we had been in a positive relationship. So I think that that's something that we all need to be clear about.
Yeah, I was sitting here listening to you, and initially I was thinking that, well, how can one be in a positive relationship and they are filled with unforgiveness, resentment, anger, bitterness, the need to control, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought also, because I look at my own life and my own relationships, but I do know that I have been in a relationship that I could think of right now, in my relationship with my daughter's dad. And because of him, because of who he was, I was able to buy a house. I went to law school. We traveled the world. It wasn't a perfect relationship by any means, you know, but because of who he was, I was able to accomplish more. You're right. You're right about that. And so we really. Initially, I was thinking you got to get yourself completely, not completely, but, you know, really together so that you can be a magnet for that. But I think it's a combination of who you become and not settling. And that brings me to where I think that a lot of black women, we've been fed this notion that there's a shortage of quality men. And that's feeding our... I know it was like this, okay, if I get a man and he got 3 out of 7 of the qualities I want, I'll keep him. I think that's feeding some of that with women. With men, you have to talk about that. I don't know. I got to say, because it's top of my head, and that is, and right here in the center of my heart, that my conversations with women and my own experience, that yes, I feel like a lot of us, we're struggling to hold on to some hope and belief that it's possible. We do see, I see some people around me with some relationships that, are, you know, a small number of people with that appear to be, have good relationships. But when I look at the pool of men, black men, I don't know. I don't feel as much hope as I'd like to feel.
Yes, and I understand that. I think on one level, a lot of that is propaganda that has been issued, that there is a shortage, okay? But then I also think that it is also rooted in reality, and this is to say that in many cases, we are, as men, we're simply not prepared to be in positive relationships. We're not prepared. And then the socialized programming that we see, in other words, the socialized norm that we are given in terms of what it means to be a man, it's rooted in sexism. Okay, so let me give an example. Like, it is expected amongst many African, not all, but many African-American males, that what it means to be a man is directly related, the value and the power that you have as a man is directly related to your domination of women. and more specifically domination, sexual domination of women. So the more sexual exploits you have, the more of a man you are. You see, so even in that sense, I'm sure that there are women who will see those types of males, and that will kind of skew their vision in terms of the other types of males who are out there. And I'm going to tell you women out there, okay, just to be clear, that there are good men, African-American, black men out there who are single and who are willing and able to be in a positive relationship. I know some of these men, so I can't say that they are not out there. They are out there. But again, if we have this mentality where they are not out there, then that will jade our vision, and that is precisely what our reality will be. Well, that's the reality that a woman will have. If you believe that there are no good men out there, or that there is a serious shortage, well, then that will be what you see. If you are clear that there are good men out there and that there is no shortage, then that will be what I call your internal gravity, and therefore you will pull that particular experience to you. So, but I also want to go back to something else because there are a lot of women who tend to choose out of desperation, and I think a lot of the programming that's out there about there being, you know, a shortage, it creates this sense of desperation. Like, we got to choose, we got to pick whatever we can have and whatever we can get. And if he has four out of seven, or three out of the seven qualities I want, then I can go ahead and deal with him, and I'll settle for that. That's desperation, and I'm going to tell women and men, for that matter, you should never choose relationships out of desperation, because desperation is rooted in a sense of scarcity, in that there is some sort of a threat of having something that you are truly deserving of, and so you choose out of desperation. And no, never do we choose the best choice out of desperation. Desperation in and of itself sets up a dynamic to wherein we set up a standard that is less than what we're deserving of, and we accept that standard. And one other thing I want to say, too, when we talk about what it is that we're looking for, this is another thing that we tend not to do, men and women. We're not clear about what type of a man or a woman we want to be in a relationship with. And one of the exercises that I always give, and I give this exercise in personal consultations all the time, you have to put together a list of everyone should have a list of at least 25 internal qualities that you would want in a prospective mate, and you should also put together a list of 25 physical characteristics that you would want in a prospective mate, and then you rank them top to bottom. The most important goes towards the top. The ones that are of lesser importance go towards the bottom. All of them are important, but the ones at the top, and I would say the top 5 to 7 should be the things that you should never, ever, ever compromise on. In point of fact, the whole list, you should try to find that person that fits everything on your list. But you should also provide a little bit of wiggle room just in case they're unable to fit all of those 25. But your top 7, I would say, let's say top 7 to top 10, you should never compromise on. The problem is that when you choose out of desperation, you will take, top 3, those are fulfilled, but everything else on the list, the other 17, he's the exact opposite of that. Okay, that's a problem. She's the exact opposite of that. That's a problem. So never choose out of desperation, and a lot of us, we choose out of desperation because the programming has been, we've been bombarded with this programming for a long time as black folk or African-American folk, that there is a shortage. African-American males have been told that there's a shortage of good African-American women, and African-American women have been told that there is a shortage of good African-American men. The truth of the matter is that all you have to do is prepare yourself to be in a positive relationship and let that be your internal gravity. And once that becomes your internal gravity, not only will you see the good men out there or the good women out there, but they will come into your space, and then you will at least have a chance. And that's really what people really want, is a chance to establish a positive relationship.
Indeed, they go hand in hand. When you make that list and all these positive qualities that you have on there, you are saying you believe they are there. Especially, you know,
yeah.
you got to be. It's like, okay, I believe that's possible. And I always say you make the list and you check it twice and three times and four times. You know, like Santa, if he can do it, we can do it too. And so you do that, and in doing so, you are setting your standards. And one of the things I want to throw in the mix is this thing called self-love. I know for mm-hmm. me, the more I love me, I really just can't tolerate and won't tolerate. It's like I'm allergic to bad treatment. You just can't be in my space and treat me badly. So that self-love will make a woman and a man say, no, no, baby, this is not that kind of party.
Mm-hmm.
And because mm-hmm. you love yourself, you can be alone with yourself. And because when people can't be alone, that's dangerous. You're going to be desperate. If you don't like
that's
to be
right.
alone with yourself, you will be desperate because they go hand in hand. It's one and the same thing. If I don't like being with me, I will try my best to be with someone. Anyone will do. And guess what? That's all you will get to, just anyone. Because mm-hmm. a couple of my male friends have said men with low self-esteem, okay, they just love women, of course, with low self-esteem. Because a woman with high self-esteem, they're not going to be able to deal with her anyway. Low self-esteem people and high self-esteem people do not vibrate at the same level, and they can't coexist. That's the way it is. So I love what you talk about, that internal gravity. Say a little bit more about that, and I want you all to get your questions together. If you have a question, I'm going to we're going to do a couple of things, housekeeping things, and Lynn is going to talk a little bit about internal gravity, that inner gravity, and play some music, come back with your questions. We're going to let you know how you can connect with Lennon, and I'll tell you about what's coming up in the next couple of weeks as well. So internal gravity, I love that because it's just, it's gravity works every time, no matter what. You jump off of a building, I jump off of a building, which I don't like that image. I'll try something different. If I jump off of a rock, I'm going down, right? So a short rock, a little rock. Talk about that.
Yes. Internal gravity is something that I've created as a symbolic representation of the power that we have as a human being to be able to pull into our scope of life experience the things that are reflective of our own personal work. So let me explain this and unpack this to people. A lot of us, we tend to think about attraction. You know, is that person attracted to me? You know, am I attracted to that person? But this is always like external. It's always about what the other person thinks. Like, you know, do they find me to be beautiful? You know, do they find me to be sexy? That's another one. A lot of women, that particular concept of your sexiness is your value. What I have come to understand is that it is not so much about attraction. It has more to do with gravity, and gravity is always dealing with the internal. It has to do with what you have done in your own personal life and in your own personal growth to build a power base within you that is going to pull unto you the experiences that is reflective of the work that you put in. So let me give everyone an example. The sun, it is a major force that has a profound influence on all life here on planet Earth. Now, is the Earth attracted to the sun, or is the Earth caught in the gravity of the sun? You see, the attraction, it has nothing to do with attraction. It has to do with the fact that the internal gravity of the sun is so great that it pulls unto it the Earth, and the Earth is therefore caught in the gravitational field of the sun. That's the power of the sun. So we can look at the sun as a force that has worked on its own development to such a degree to where it has power over other forces in the universe. Here's another example. The sun, it has this power over the Earth. The Earth also has a force rotating around it, and that force would be the moon. And we can ask the question, is the moon attracted to the Earth? No, okay, because it's simply not considering, you know, does a Earth think that I'm beautiful? You know, it doesn't think that way, okay? It is trapped in the gravitational field of the Earth. In other words, the gravitational pull of the Earth, which is internal, keyword, the internal pull is so great that it has pulled unto it this other solar body called the moon, and the moon rotates around the sun. Now, I want people to take that analogy and put yourself in the position of the sun. Or you can even put yourself in the position of the earth. It doesn't matter. Let's say you're the earth. When you refine yourself, when you work on your thoughts, your words, your actions, when you think about what kind of relationship you want and to be in, when you think about what you have to offer to a relationship, here we go. When you have taken the time to develop those things that you can bring to the relationship that is going to benefit your partner and your partner does the same, that is developing internal gravity. You see, and so what I'm saying is that it's not so much about attracting anything, because attracting always has to do with what someone else thinks is beneficial to them. It is more about developing an internal gravity that is so great that you pull other bodies or solar bodies, in this case, pull other bodies of a potential partner who is going to be reflective of the work that you put in to yourself as a human being. So when we talk about internal gravity, that is key. But, you know, internal gravity also, and part of developing internal gravity is also what level of love that you have for yourself. That builds your internal gravity. Refining your thoughts builds your, improving upon your self-esteem builds your internal gravity. These are all internal things that you do, right? Changing your diet, being as healthy as you can possibly be, speaking words of high vibration, doing things that are of a loving nature and of a loving quality, this builds your internal gravity. And therefore, when your internal gravity reaches this critical mass, you will have no problem with bringing into the scope of your influence another solar body. In this case, if you're a woman, to bring a man that is going to be reflective of that internal gravity, or bring, if you're a man, to bring in a woman who is going to be compelled to come into your space based upon your internal gravity. But in the first place, it has to do with the work that you put in on yourself. The problem is that we tend not to do that work, and therefore our internal gravity is very low, and as a consequence, we become desperate. And we begin to select anyone who comes within our field of influence, not realizing that those people are not there to bring us the positive relationship. Those people are there to teach us what a negative relationship is like. And then we have to make the decision to move beyond that paradigm. And how do we move beyond that paradigm? By working on ourselves day by day. And when you work on yourself day by day, you build up this internal gravity, and then you will not tolerate anything less than what you're deserving of. You won't tolerate the man who calls you a bitch or calls you a whore, the man who cheats. You won't tolerate the woman who looks at you and demeans you and disrespects you. You just won't tolerate that anymore, because your internal gravity is so great that you will only accept into your field of influence that which is reflective of the work that you put into yourself. And that's what this concept that I've developed, that I call internal gravity, is all about. It's all about the internal and pulling onto you based upon what is going on inside of you, refining your thoughts, your words, and your actions day by day.
That is beautiful. I receive that, because I can see that it has taken me some time to get here. But I know that that's where my work is, and I can feel it. And it's so good, because then you don't, if you don't change your internal gravity force, if that doesn't change, then you're fighting to resist settling. But as you change that, it's no longer a fight. You're grooving and you're moving through life and doing things that feel good, whether that's your business, hanging out with people who are supportive and loving. But like you said, you just won't tolerate, whether it's from a man or woman, a boy or girl, or alien, you just won't tolerate maltreatment.
Right.
You
that's
know
right.
what I mean? It's like you repel it. And that's a beautiful thing. I love that concept. I'll call it EG for short. we got the IQ, and we got the emotional intelligence, and we got EG now. Yes. And it's important.
Well, it's very important. And I can say this, that when I use that concept, it is something that I've lived, so I know that it works, because this is precisely what has happened for my wife and I. And let me take this even a step further, because this goes even deeper than what I've outlined. Part of developing the internal gravity is that when you have a partner that is reflective of the work that you put in, your gravity now doubles. You see, because they come in and they bring their gravity, and then your gravity doubles, because now you're a central mass, and that's what my wife and I, we have. And here's the even more profound part. Then you start to create as a solar body, my wife and I, okay, in this marriage of consciousness, we become a solar body that has this internal gravity that is very, very powerful, much more powerful than mine alone and hers alone. And then now when we have these children, we have these other solar bodies that now begin to rotate around us. See, that's what we call a family dynamic. That's what really families are. You think about it. You have these children, and these children are always caught in your gravity, assuming that you're responsible. They're always caught around, and they're always, sometimes they're around too much. You're like, can you please leave me alone? I'm trying to get this done. You're making too much noise. But there's a reason why they're there. See, they're there because they're caught in your internal gravity, and they're there because they're part of your responsibility as parents, but then also how you raise them improves upon and generates a greater and higher level of internal gravity for each one of them. And if you do it right, if you go through this process as they get older and older, not only do you prepare them for positive relationship, but their internal gravity is also added unto your internal gravity. You see, so it's not just the mother and the father now. It's also about the children and what they bring as solar bodies into the mix, too. And if you raise them right, you raise them in love. You see, we love our children. We don't hit them. We don't spank them. We don't curse at them. All this kind of thing that I grew up, they've never heard me call my wife out of her name, never heard me yell at my wife. None of this stuff they get to see, and my wife and I were affectionate. They get to see this every single day. That builds their internal gravity. It builds what they perceive to be possible. Their perception is not limited to dysfunctional reality, to dysfunctional relationships. Those dysfunctional relationships lowers the self-esteem and therefore lowers the internal gravity. They get to see the exact opposite of that. And see, the beautiful thing is that as we continue to progress through the universe as these solar bodies, my wife and I, we have these children that we're raising, and they're improving upon and generating greater critical mass to where their internal gravity is even greater than what it was when they first came onto the scene. But then that is all added unto us. You see, that's when the family dynamic becomes an empowering force. So it goes even beyond that. And then someday when our children, if they so choose to have children, the children that they bring into the world and their relationships, that will also add more gravity. And see, the thing is this, that really what I'm getting at, just for, I know we're using analogy here, really what I'm getting at is this concept of love, because that internal gravity is really what love is. See, a lot of us, we have this concept that love is about the romance, and I understand all of that, but at its core essence, love has to do with what it is that you're able to bring into your life that brings you happiness. That's really what love comes down to. So really, internal gravity is the degree to which you love yourself and to the degree to which you are willing and able to love others. And when you're able to do that, whether that's in a relationship, whether that's once you're in a marriage of consciousness and then you begin to have these wonderful babies, the same rule applies. It all comes back to love. So then it goes back to what we said in the beginning. Do I love myself? Do I love myself enough not to choose out of desperation? Do I love myself enough not to stay in this negative toxic relationship? Do I love myself enough not to deal with that man or that woman who is going to bring dysfunction, sorrow, and pain into my life? So it always comes back to love, and the premise of love is the value that you place upon yourself as a human being in the first place.
Amen, amen, amen. Yes, yes. Oh, I love it. I love it. And I encourage you all to go to Lennon Honors. There's no S on his name. But go to his YouTube channel and his website, LennonHonor.com. And let me tell you, I have observed him and his wife. Her name is Ayika or Ayita.
Ayita.
Ayita. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That was close. Ayita. I've observed her and him on camera and with the baby Jay. Did I get his name right?
Yes.
I know the whole family. I'm going to adopt your family. Okay. So I watched them on camera, and I watched them. One reason I watch you all is because it's beautiful to watch love in action. And especially, especially you don't see these images of us that often, just with this kind of respect that I have seen you and your wife display for each other. I mean, and tenderness and consideration, and I just love watching that. So I love what you say, but I also enjoy watching you all on camera. And one thing, I don't even know how a woman can look like she does with had five children. I mean, she looks, it's amazing. And she's given birth, I presume, to these children. And so that, all those kinds of things that, you know, it gives me such joy to know that you all exist. And I really, I'm sitting here saying to myself, someone should study this family and the children and follow the children until they're in their 20s and whatever and see what they do. I really am sitting here thinking that, you know, because what we do study in our culture pathology. Why can't we study health and well-being?
That's a good point. Yeah, good point.
You know? And so I will break now because I told you I do get excited. I'm very excited about these topics because self-love then causes us to treat ourselves in such a way that we attract to ourselves only people who, because we're the first representation. We show people how to love us by how we love us. So if I'm abusive to myself, well, why would they be otherwise? Okay. If I call another woman bitch and she calls me bitch and we're supposed to be playful and all that crazy stuff, and then, well, why wouldn't a man call us a bitch? Why not?
Well, there you go.
Why wouldn't he, right? So I don't understand that women calling each other bitches fun or terms of endearment. I don't understand that. But some women do it. And it's supposed to be affection. So we're going to go to a break and come back and raise your hand by pressing 1 if you want to ask Lennon a question or a comment. He's going to give out his information upon our return. And listen carefully to these words that one of my favorite artists, Miss Jill Scott, sings. It's very fitting. It's called Prepared.
Gonna see where my head has been, and I've been apologizing to some people, some bridges I needed to mend. And I've been eating more green, get my body out the line. Oh, I'm gonna be super fine. And I've been letting some old ideas go. I'm making room for my life to grow. I just wanna be free. Hey. Yeah.
I just wanna be free.
Getting myself ready for what's coming for me, yeah, yeah, yeah. I am.
I just wanna be
baby. Hear me now. I've been getting recipes off the internet. Be paying. I realize they're only good when I put my love spices all up in the rising. I've been enjoying people who love each other, husband and wife, sister and brother, father and mother. I let the queen inside, I let her shine.
Jill. Oh, I've loved Jill Scott for years. I will keep loving her because she brings it. She just wants to be prepared, and I love what she says. She's been watching people who love each other. That's what we've been talking about. Examples. And so we may have to be that example to our community, our circle of friends, our children. Not too late. It's not too late. If you're here right now, you can love yourself so deeply, so fiercely, that you become this person who people love and respect, because you won't allow anything less than that. And so we've been talking with Lynn and Honor. He's a husband, father of 5 children, 3 of whom he has delivered himself with his own hands. How many men, you know, have done that? How many women? I mean, that's amazing right there. And he's got 5 books, okay? He has 5 books. And let me tell you, give you the title of at least a couple of his books. He's written 5 books. And he has a YouTube channel. Is it called Lynn and Honor, your channel?
Lynn and Honor Films.
Lynn and Honor Films, okay?
Yeah.
YouTube. Mm-hmm. Stop. He just got, his videos are like amazing, okay? You can learn so much. And he wrote Writings for the Fathers of the World of Tomorrow. Another book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. And he has 3 more books that I don't have listed in front of me. And so let me tell you what's coming up, and then we will open it up. I want you to raise your hand. If you have a question, press 1 for Lennon, okay? Press 1. So next week, we're shifting gears a bit, and I have a woman who's coming on. She's called the Queen of Scene. Her name is Jenny Kovacs, and she is from the U.K. So it'll be 11:30 p.m. in the U.K. when she comes on the air, so appreciate that. And she's coming on to talk about how to move through your fear of being visible. I've been talking a whole bunch about that lately on Facebook, and I've written LinkedIn articles about it, and a lot of people, women particularly, are responding to it because unbeknownst to many women, we are afraid of being visible, and it's impacting our relationships, it's impacting our business and our bank accounts, okay? So Jenny Kovacs is her name, and she's called the Queen of Being Seen. The Queen of Being Seen, or maybe just the Queen of Scene. But she'll be on next week. That's March 10th. And then the 17th, I think I have my author, Stephanie Smalls, is in the works. I think she's going to nail down for the 17th. She's coming on, and she's written a book. She changed the name of the book, but it used to be called Don't Let the White Girls Win, okay? And she changed the name. And I had her on the Anthony McCarthy show when I used to work for that show, and it was a very interesting conversation. So it's about relationships, and we will explore relationships from another vantage point. The week after that, C.J. Gross, he's a coach. He's a contributor to my book, Why Did He Break Up With Me? He talks, and we talk so much tonight about so many important things, but he talks about the challenges of black love, and that I won't tell you what they are. You just have to come and listen to the show. That's March 24th, okay? So he'll be on, and he's awesome as well. So I want to invite you to join my Facebook page. If you are a woman, I have a page called Unmasking, Taking Off the Mask, Unmasking. And if you are ready to stand in your power unapologetically, if you're ready to be in a community where you can get support for that, because it's really deep,
And even though some people might think women are out there doing their thing, they don't know the whole story. A lot of times we're still holding back, playing small, dumbing down, hiding, people-pleasing, doing a lot of that stuff, and it's hurting us. And so unmasking, please come and join my Facebook page. It's the growing page, and so here we are. And lastly, you're going to have the last 20 minutes because I'm going to tell you I want you to come to my website. I want you to visit my website, DeborahRicks.com. I do coach. If you want to give birth to a book, I'm your woman. If you want to just give birth to deeper self-love, I'm her. I'm the one. And I have books there as well. I'm an author. And just check me out and you can get my information and send me a message. And we can do a strategy discovery session and see where you are and if there's a good fit between you and me. Now raise your hand. Let's see if anybody has a question or a comment. I have some talking to people on. I don't see any hands raised. I see. I know some of these numbers now. Let's see. Okay. You may or may not deliberately, you may have raised your hand earlier when I asked if there was a sound was okay with Lennon. So if you don't want to speak when I call your number out, you just let me know, okay? So it is 401-829. Welcome to She Struts Radio. Do you have a question or comment for Lennon or not? I guess that's a no. Okay. So, Lennon, what's the role of forgiveness in this? Because to me, we don't talk enough about it. But I know that a lot of people, the reason why they are attracting, pulling into their lives, people that resemble their mothers and their fathers because they haven't done the work to heal that source relationship. John Bradshaw, a psychotherapist, he talks about the source relationship. He says, so long as you, and I'm not reading, but it feels like I'm, he says, so long as you don't heal that relationship that you had with your mother, that troubled relationship you had with your father, you will continue to be in the same relationship. And I know for a fact I had a troubled relationship with my dad, and trust and believe, I saw that relationship over and over in the men that I was in relationship with. And these men reminded me of my father in some of his characteristics. Oh, my God, and I have not been able to shake that. But I had to do some forgiveness work. I had to forgive my dad. I have had to stop trying to, as they say, you try to finish, like you're trying to finish your relationship. Like if your dad didn't love you, you attract somebody just like him and try to make that man love you. And so what do you say about that, Lennon?
Yes. Well, most of the decisions that we make, the unconscious decisions that we make in our adulthood are based upon childhood experiences. They call that subconscious programs that we run. And there are a lot of us, we choose relationships in adulthood that mimic the types of relationships that we had when we with our parents. I'll say, so let me give an example. If a woman, and this isn't always the case, because there are women who transcend the programming, but a woman may in their childhood have had a negative relationship with their father, and then she may seek to be in a relationship with a male and conscious and unconsciously choose a male that will bring to her similar experiences that she had with her father, because now it provides her with an unconscious opportunity to heal from the traumas that those situations caused her when she was a child. And this happens for so many of us. It happens for so many of us.
So what should we do? Give us, since we have about 15 minutes, give my listening audience, men and women and men, give us some takeaways, something that we could take away that we can begin to do now. I know you talked, you really have offered a lot of solutions, but I know that was me at one time, and I just had to really, like, I've been on this journey for a long time to heal myself. But I just had to, it's like, what can we do now? What are some steps to take, like practical steps to stop doing that and to do something different? Whatever you want to offer. It may not be the right question, but whatever you want to leave with my audience.
Yes. I tend to work with this concept called conscious reflection. And what that means is that we reflect on those experiences, those relationships consciously. And most of us, we tend not to do that. One of the reasons why we tend not to deal with those childhood relationships, as an example of girl's relationship with her father that was tumultuous, is because to revisit it often causes levels of pain and suffering. Even in our adulthood, we have a very difficult time going back and looking at those traumatizing relationships. However, when we approach those experiences consciously, what we do is we allow ourselves the space and time to intellectually dissect the nature of those relationships without succumbing to the emotional traumatization that we experienced when we were a child. Okay, so this is what I mean by conscious reflection, to reflect back on the relationship that you had with your father without succumbing to the emotional trauma of the actual relationship. A lot of times what happens is when people think about those relationships, they relive, or they are triggered, their traumas are triggered, and they're forced to relive the pain and suffering, and that does a disservice to the individual. But if we actually engage the experience with a level of conscious awareness, then we can set aside the emotional component but then dissect it intellectually. This does is it actually begins to create space. It creates space between the grown woman today versus the little girl of yesterday. The little girl of yesterday experienced the traumatizing relationship with her father, but to create space. And when there is no space, what ends up happening is the traumatized girl, she chooses the relationship for the grown woman. She chooses a similar relationship to the one that she experienced when she was dealing with her father. And here's the thing. There is this, it's a natural thing within us as a human species, and I think everyone needs to understand this, including those of us who have children or plan on having children. It's a natural phenomenon. We always have this yearning to work out our relationship with our parents. Even when they're absent, I mean, the parent can be completely absent, but there's still this yearning that somehow, some way, we're going to rectify this. Somehow, some way, we're going to resolve this. Somehow, some way, something is going to happen to where my father or my mother will become the mother or father that I always needed them to be. And some of us, we carry that into our adulthood, 40 years old, 30, 40, 50, 60, still yearning, this childhood yearning for this parental relationship to the child that every one of us have. We have this. It's completely natural, and it's a natural occurring phenomenon. The problem is, for a lot of us, is that if we have that yearning and we allow the child that has that yearning to jump into the driver's seat of our decision-making as adults, that child is always going to choose relationships that presents the child with an opportunity to heal the relationship with the father. So then the male that the grown person, the grown woman chooses is really a representation of the father, and she has similar experiences with him, but it also provides the little girl with an opportunity, this longstanding issue of always wanting to improve upon the relationship with the father figure, to somehow make it okay, to somehow make it all right, that somehow this man is now going to become and do for me what I always needed him to do when I was a child. And that's totally dysfunctional because ultimately the grown woman suffers. So part of what I'm saying is that step one is to engage in conscious reflection. We got to be clear about what's actually taking place when we make these decisions. Oftentimes, it's the traumatized child making the decision. What I recommend that people do is to create space. You create space between that traumatized child and the grown woman, the grown adult. The more space you create through conscious reflection, the less of an influence that child will have. And at a certain point, the child will have no influence. Now you're in the driver's seat of your life vehicle, and that child is not jumping up into the driver's seat and taking control of the wheel, driving you off in directions wherein you're being abused and traumatized and having these negative relationships. Now, as a grown woman, you claim your power, and you put the little girl in the back seat, and you say, look, baby girl, I got this. I have it under control. Everything's going to be all right. You just relax. I'm in control, and I'm going to get us to the destination of love. And that's how it pretty much works. So that's one of the things I would recommend is the conscious reflection. And when that's done, you don't succumb to the negative emotional aspect of it. What you do is you intellectualize the experience. One of the intellectual questions you ask is, why did I experience that? What was the lesson that I was meant to learn? And can I choose a partner that does not mimic what I experienced with that negative relationship with my father? This is the conscious reflection part. There's other things too, but I would recommend to start.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got to add this because that is the internal gravity that is the child, it's the inner wounded child that's pulling these relationships in. Some people believe that every relationship is here to heal us. I'm one of those people. Anyway, I'm one of those people. And the Course in Miracles says that relationships are assignments. And so there's a couple of things that come to mind when you talk about that. Is that it's like you cannot pull these people. It's like if that's going on inside of you, it's like a magnet. If you're going to pull these people into your life. What I will say to that is, and you're talking about conscious reflection, I would say if for those listening, do some inner child work. That could be the conscious reflection. Actually, find some material. I have e-books that I have because up until just last year, I was still doing some of that stuff in my relationship that I've healed a lot because I've forgiven my father decades ago, but it was still there. And so I had to do inner child work. And when you start to take care, when I say care for the inner child, then the adult can step forward. But until you take care of that child keeps acting out. So find material, go on Amazon, wherever you need to go, and you can get material on the inner child, healing the inner child. And if you want to hit me up later, I can share with you what I got. And but you can find it on Amazon. Because I've noticed that I had to say to God, listen, God, I need you to show me how to love myself. And I was led to inner child work, and I'll actually have a conversation with my inner child on paper. The adult talking to the child, and the child will tell me what she needs, and it's ongoing. It's not healing the inner child only; it's caring for the inner child because she's always there. He's always there. They're there, and when you're scared, it's the child that's scared. And when you got angst, it's the child that's got angst. And when you deal with that, take care of that child. It's like taking care of a child that's external to you. That child starts to calm down. And that child will go to sleep, and then you, as the adult, can step forward. I just wanted to add that because it's so critical to growing and deepening in self-love because nobody's going to do that for us. That's our work to do. Nobody. And that goes for men and women. And then you will start to see, I believe, your relationships with people really change because then you start showing up more as the adult instead of that person throwing tantrums. Grown people throwing temper tantrums. I know men in their 60s throwing temper tantrums, running around the kitchen screaming. You know, imagine that. And so, Lennon, there's got about 6 minutes, and I have many more questions. And of course, we got 6 minutes. But so, what else would you say?
Well, you know, I would just want to remind people, especially for those who are in relationships or who are seeking to get into a positive relationship, not to give up hope. There's personal work that needs to be done. Of course, dealing with the inner child is part of that. Healing from past relationships is also part of that. Refining yourself as a human being, seeing the human value of your species have. So as a man, you see the human value of a woman, and as a woman, you see the human value of a man. I mean, there's so much work that needs to be done, but I will tell you this, that when you commit to the work and you're consistent with it, and then when you honor yourself as you do the work, that it will put you in a position to have at least a chance, and that's really what people want, at least a chance to be in a positive relationship. And I'm living proof of this. I'm not saying this hypothetically. I'm saying this as something that I've actually lived in my life. And some people, you know, they would say it's kind of like a miracle. I don't look at it as a miracle. I look at it as an opportunity that we all have if we are committed to doing the work. And I'm very thankful. Again, my wife and I, we have five beautiful children, and we are about to celebrate our 15-year anniversary. When I was growing up, I didn't see anything like that. But just because I didn't see that, it does not mean, it did not mean that I couldn't achieve what I have achieved, and it does not mean that I cannot achieve even greater beyond what I've achieved up to this point. So I want everyone to keep the faith, to keep in your mind the notion that it is possible to be in a positive relationship, because if I'm able to do it, you most definitely are able to do it as well. And I thank you for the opportunity that you've given me to talk with your audience. I really appreciate it.
Yes, well, don't go yet, because I want you to give out your information for people to reach out to you. And I've got to tell you, I agree. A lot of times we say that to people, if I can do it, you can do it too. But if you go to his YouTube channel and you watch his videos and you hear his story about his relationship with his father and how his father was so abusive and he was on drugs, and you hear that story and you then observe him and his wife on camera with their children, it will give you hope. Because it's something amazing to me that you, at that young age, that you had a vision. That's what I would say. You had a vision of what could be without any role models. And that, to me, is just the power of the human mind, of the divine mind. And I just applaud you for having done that, and that you are sharing it across the globe with people. So give your information out to people if they want to reach out to you.
Yeah, so I am on YouTube under Linen Honor Films, and I talk on a lot of different topics, but those of you who are looking for the relationship, just look for the playlist for relationships. We have, I don't know, hundreds of videos on that topic. Well, that's our main topic, is positive male from relationships. I'm also on Facebook under Linen Honor and Twitter under Linen Honor, and my website is linenhonor.com. And my project that I'm working on right now is titled NWA, A Critical Analysis. It's a documentary, and we're dissecting the music and lyrics of NWA and talking about the sociological implications, and most importantly, talking about the importance of really being committed to establishing positive relationships and healthy family institutions by making sure that we're not being negatively influenced by negative media programming. And I think NWA is an excellent example in terms of lyrical composition of the perpetuation of negative male-female relationships and dysfunctional families. So we're going to be dissecting that in the documentary. And again, I want to thank you so very much for this opportunity. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I look forward to doing it again someday soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Linen Honor. Go check out his website, his books. Make sure you go to his channel, subscribe, because you will be uplifted. Thank you very much. I want to thank you all for joining me this evening. I'm your host, Deborah M. Ricks, and please check my website out at DeborahRicks.com. And remember, be kind to yourselves, and know this, that you are indeed the light.
Brokenness inside, I am light. Divinity defined.